Today's message is entitled Lady Wisdom's Food and Drink. In Proverbs chapter 9, wisdom and folly or foolishness are each personified as a woman. Each of these women has a home in the highest places of town. Each of these women calls to people who are passing by, inviting them to come into their home and to partake of the banquet that they have prepared. But the outcome of entering the home of Lady Wisdom and the home of Woman Folly is radically different. One leads to life. The other leads to death. Please read with me. In Proverbs chapter 9, we're going to read the two descriptions of these two women. Chapter 9, verse 1. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn her seven pillars. She has slaughtered her beasts. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her young women to call from the highest places in the town. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. To him who lacks sense, she says, come, eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and live and walk in the way of insight. And then look down at verse 11 and 12. For by me your days will be multiplied and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it. Verse 13 gives us the description of this other woman. The woman Folly is loud. She is seductive and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house. She takes a seat on the highest places of the town, calling to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And to him who lacks sense, she says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. In other words, she calls us to the light in what is forbidden, what is off limits. Verse 18, but he, the simple person, does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol, of hell. And may God bless the reading of his word. Lady Wisdom calls the simple to leave their simple ways and to live, to turn from foolishness and to find true life. Woman Folly calls the simple to delight in the forbidden, and yet we learn that the dead are in her house. The warning of Proverbs chapter 9 is clear. The choice between wisdom and folly is a choice between life and death. The choice that we face between wisdom and folly ultimately is a choice between life and death. Not only life in the sense of blessing and benefit, or death in the sense of an early death, but eternal life and eternal death. The question being whether or not we will truly know God. Now, if you're paying attention and you hear the description of these two women that represent folly and wisdom, the question that you should be asking is, how do I choose one or the other? Because the fact is that there isn't an actual woman who calls to us. Wouldn't that make it much simpler if wisdom were actually a woman who were, you know, out in the lobby yelling after church, oh, there she is, there's Lady Wisdom. But there's not an actual woman. There's not an actual house that we walk into. There's not real food that we pick up and eat. And so the question that confronts us is, how do we go from metaphor and analogy to reality in our actual lives? What does it mean for us to choose wisdom instead of folly? Well, the answer is given to us in verses 7 through 10. These in-between verses show us in a very practical way how we do our choosing. And so let's read verses 7 through 10 right now. Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. And then the key verse, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. The knowledge of the Holy One is insight. You could read these verses and assume that they're only giving advice about who you should or shouldn't give correction to. And in one sense, they are telling what the result will be if you correct a scoffer, if you give reproof to a wicked man. And yet, I believe we're to read these verses with a focus on how we receive correction and what type of person we are. You see, these verses really present to us two very different responses to correction and instruction. And in the context of the overall chapter, they really provide a roadmap for us to understand how we choose either woman folly or lady wisdom. And so we see in these verses that the scoffer or the wicked man abuses and injures and hates anybody who tries to correct him, or tries to instruct him. But on the other hand, we see that the wise man responds very differently. He loves and he learns from those who correct and instruct him. So here's the connection that we need to see. Whether we choose wisdom or folly is directly tied to our response to correction and instruction. Whether we choose wisdom or folly is directly tied to our response to correction and instruction. Now you'll notice that in these verses, there are four different words used. Correct, reprove, instruct, and teach. And for the most part, I think we understand these words. To correct means to tell someone that they are mistaken. We use the phrase correct course to basically say you're going in the wrong direction and you correct the direction or the path that they're on. Instruction involves someone teaching a subject or a skill. It involves giving guidance and direction. To teach is to show or explain to someone else how to do something. Now, this word reprove is maybe less familiar to you. It has a much stronger sense of rebuke, disapproval. It has a strong judicial connection, the sense that something is being evaluated as being wrong. So here's an example, a small example of how I was reproved by a friend in this church. This is a dear lady in this church. I highly respect her. And I told her about something that I was doing at my home. Now, here's what was happening. We have a yard that deer love to run through. Now, I know you picture Bambi, and I know you love Bambi and all of that. And I do, too. I love Bambi. But Bambi doesn't run through my yard. Tick-infested deer who eat all of my vegetation run through my yard, all right? So I felt justified in taking out my BB gun when they went through and popping them in the rear end. Now, it's actually just a great little break from sermon prep to pull out the BB gun and shoot a deer. But I was having a conversation with this dear lady in the church, and I knew that she, when I say dear, I mean as in an affectionate way, is what I was trying to say. But she actually is a hunter, and she loves guns, and so I thought she would really be impressed that I had my little BB gun, and I was shooting at deer. She was not impressed. And I told her about my practice, and she looked at me very sternly, and she says, "That is wrong. That only leads to infection and irritates their skin. If you want to shoot, you must shoot to kill." I was reproved in that moment. And through her faithful, true words, I realized that what I was doing was inhumane and it wasn't the right thing. And I want all of you animal lovers to know that I no longer shoot the deer with my BB gun. I have thrown a grenade or two at them, though. The point of all these words, though, is that they involve being informed that you're wrong about something. Okay, so you don't need to be taught something unless you lack knowledge, right? You don't need to be corrected unless you're incorrect. You don't need to be reproved unless you're wrong. And that is why instruction and teaching and correction, even though we need them, even though on one level we can all say we don't know everything, we make mistakes, we can all agree to that. When the instruction and correction comes, our pride rises up against it. We really don't like it. And we have to take it from certain people. In those moments where it's obvious to the entire world that we're wrong, or because of the position of authority that the person is that's in is correcting us, we have to listen to their words. But because of our sinful tendency to be proud, we don't like correction. We don't like instruction. We don't like hearing that we're wrong. And yet what Proverbs 9 is saying is that how we choose to respond in these moments when that message is coming to us, when we're being corrected. And think of all the different ways it comes to us. It can come to us from a spouse. It can come to us from a friend. It can come to us from a boss or a coworker, or just so many different ways people can come to us with correction, instruction, with information, with pointing out that something we're doing isn't right, our motive, our attitude, the end result of our work, whatever it might be. Correction can come in many different forms. And what Proverbs 9 is saying is that how we respond in that moment is key to whether or not we will be wise or foolish. It's one of the most important decisions that we make. I want you to take a look at this little graph that I hope will help us to think about this. On the left, you see a range of different types of people, from the scoffer on the bottom, who is hardened in his foolishness, all the way to the top to the wise person. On the right, you see what Proverbs says is that person's response to correction or instruction. So how you respond to correction or instruction correlates to whether or not you're wise or foolish. And there's a range involved. So let's just look at this together, starting in the middle with the simple person. And this is the person that Lady Wisdom and Woman Folly is calling out to. It's the person that's unformed, open-minded, unsure of how they're going to respond. Their attitude towards correction is not fully formed. They have a choice to make. Are they going to listen to it? Are they going to embrace it? Are they going to turn away from it? That would describe many of us in terms of our attitude towards correction and instruction. But if we examine the path of wisdom, here's what we see. You know, the first step towards wisdom is what you might call begrudging acceptance. And this is where a lot of us begin when we're just trying to grow in wisdom. We accept the correction. Maybe you're a son or daughter and your parents are bringing correction to you and you accept it, but it's almost like you're taking medicine that just tastes nasty. Or maybe you're a new Christian and someone has come to you and they've shared something about your life that they're concerned about, or something that's contradicting God's word, and you're sitting there and you know they're trying to help you and you know they're trying to love you, but every, you know, fiber of your being is just shouting, this is uncomfortable. I don't like this. This is unenjoyable. So there's this begrudging acceptance. Now, that's better than rejection, isn't it? So if you're there, okay, that's a good first step. But you don't want to stay there, because it's very easy to slip from begrudging acceptance down the chart towards foolishness very easily. If we want to grow in wisdom, we have to move beyond begrudging acceptance to appreciation. In verse 9, we read about the righteous man increasing in learning when he's taught. We see that the wise man, when he is given instruction, grows still wiser. There's this sense that the wise person takes it and benefits from it. And so there's this awareness in the heart of a wise person that instruction and correction should be appreciated, should be welcomed. And the next step in response to that, as you continue to grow in wisdom, is to actually begin pursuing instruction. Not just waiting for somebody to get so fed up with how you're messing up that they come to you, but you to actually go to other people. And you know, that is a big sign of growth in wisdom. When a person takes that step of not just receiving it, and maybe even appreciating it after it comes, but actually going and looking for it. And maybe you've taken that step as a believer in Jesus Christ, and you actually stepped out and you talked to someone and you said, "Hey, what do you think of this part of my life?" Or you're a married couple and you went to another couple and you said, "We're having this challenge in our marriage. Will you speak to our circumstance, our situation?" If you've done anything like that, I just want you to be encouraged. That's a sign of wisdom. That's a sign that the Holy Spirit is at work in your life, cultivating a heart of humility that recognizes that you need help. And so be encouraged if you're at that place. And if you've never done that, try it. Take a step in the direction of wisdom. But if we would be truly wise, what we see in Proverbs chapter 9 and in many other places in Proverbs is that we must love instruction and correction. Loving it. Look at verse 8 again. It says, "Don't reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you, but reprove a wise man." Reprove a wise man. In other words, rebuke a wise man. Tell him that he's wrong about something. Point out an error in his life. You do that to a wise man, and what's his response? He loves you. It's amazing. He loves you. Do you love people that reprove you or correct you? Do you hug them? Do you say, "Can I buy you lunch? Thank you so much." Do you write them a note and just, "You know what? I know I already thanked you, but I just want to thank you again. Because I knew it was hard for you to do that." You see, a wise person recognizes that for a person to bring that reproof or correction involves them loving you enough to do that. And so the response should be a love for the gift that correction and instruction is. You know, the older that you get and the more experienced that you become, whether it's in your vocation, your whatever field that you work in, or just life in general, the more rare correction and instruction becomes. Do you see that? When you're young and you're inexperienced and everybody knows that, they don't mind bringing correction instruction. I mean, like if you're a 5-year-old, everybody instructs you. They don't even have to know you. They don't even have to be your parents. You'll just be doing something. They'll be like, "Hey, kid, stop that." Right? "Hey, kid, get off the road. Get on the sidewalk." But if time goes by and you grow up physically, and maybe you're no longer the kid, you're the dad, and you put on the suit and the tie, people look at you differently. You might be walking in the road, and they'll just kind of drive around you and think, "Oh, that guy must know what he's doing. He's walking in the middle of the road." They might not instruct or correct because they assume, because of your experience, that you're making a good choice. Maybe they'll think that you're a moron, but they won't share it with you. And that's why as you grow older and more respected and more experienced, if you're wise, you'll see just how valuable having a person in your life who's willing to challenge you really is. You see, as you go on in life and you're growing in wisdom in different ways, you shouldn't be thinking, "Oh, this is wonderful. Fewer and fewer people are bringing me correction. I must be getting more perfect." See, that's the wrong thought. The right thought, the thought of a wise person, is to say, "Fewer and fewer people are correcting me. I got to work harder to find it. I got to search them out. I've got to ask them questions. I've got to draw them out and even press past their initial statements of, no, I don't have any thoughts for you. And so if you're a wise person, you will cultivate people who are willing to disagree with you. You'll hold on to those friends that are willing to, in a loving way, get in your face. If you are a manager or you run a business, you will seek to hire people and encourage people who are willing to go against the kind of the popular thought and raise their hand and say, I'm just not sure that this is a good idea, or are we thinking accurately about that? If you're a wise person, you will marry someone who's willing to stand up to you and disagree with you. Whether you're a husband or a wife, you'll value that. You'll realize the need you have for the perspective of others. You'll ask your kids, if you're a parent, to examine you. And you'll ask them if they see hypocrisy or a lack of integrity. You see, a wise person doesn't say, well, I already see my faults. I don't need to be told them. I'm already aware of it. A wise person wants other people to share the things that maybe they already see, just so they can see it more clearly. Here's the essential point that I want to draw your attention to. Correction and instruction are the food and drink of Lady Wisdom. Correction and instruction are the food and drink of Lady Wisdom. I don't know what you picture when you think of going into Lady Wisdom's house. And you think about the banquet that's there. We hear about her having the meat. You know, she's been grilling on the barbecue and she's got the wine there. And maybe you picture that just people telling you you're great and you're wonderful. That sounds like a good meal, right? But all the benefits and all the protection and all the success and wealth and prosperity that's promised in the book of Proverbs for those who walk in the fear of the Lord and in wisdom comes to us not by eating a meal that involves people patting us on the back, but what we learn here is that the food and drink of Lady Wisdom is correction and instruction. Because if we're not told how we can improve, if we're not told where we're getting something wrong, how can we ever grow? I mean, this is true of every area of life. It's true in every discipline, be it music or art or law or medicine, whatever it might be. We only grow and improve when we realize where we're doing something wrong. Wisdom comes when we pick up the glass of correction. We say, I need more of this. Pour me another glass. And you know, the first time you taste it, you might not like the taste. But it's not the wine's fault. You have an undiscerning palate. You need to learn just how fine this wine is. You need to learn just what an exquisite meal is being served to you. And it's an acquired taste, isn't it? And yet the wise sit at that table and take correction and instruction, and they love it because they know it's only through that they can grow. They can become more wise. But look back at the chart, because there is another direction that we can go in our response to correction and instruction. And do you find yourself slipping down on this chart towards the direction of folly? Maybe you're indifferent. This is sort of the whatever attitude towards instruction. It's not that you're outright rejecting it when somebody else comes to you and they try to teach you something. But you just have this attitude of, okay, whatever. I don't care. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to take it in, but I really don't want to be here. This is not really what I want. Well, that's a dangerous place to be. You might think, oh, I'm not resisting. But you're not loving. You're not embracing. The next step toward being a fool is to be annoyed by the correction. Start to get irritated. Like, okay, another thought for me. Great. Oh, this is just instruct and correct Josh month or something. Oh, yeah, okay, bring it on. Yeah, give it to me. Thank you very much, jerk. You ever been there? And it's so easy to slip into the next step towards foolishness, which is to begin to judge other people. You're not just annoyed anymore. You begin to assume that their motive is wrong. Like this person, they come to me again and they're telling me I'm wrong about something. They're giving me advice. They're giving me instruction. You know, I don't think they like me. I don't think they've ever liked me. Honestly, like from the first day I met them. You know, when I think back to that, I could tell they don't like me. They're jealous. They are jealous of me. It's actually, their whole family's kind of jealous. They're just jealous by nature. I don't know what, their whole neighborhood, their whole town they live in, jealous. Evil, wicked people bringing me instruction. Yeah, I hear you, Lord. I hear what you're saying. I get discernment about this. Yes, I do. Sneaky. These people are sneaky. Yeah. They've got an agenda. You see how you can bring that kind of judgment to people, and you see how that leads to actually beginning to hate not only the instruction, but the people who are willing to help you by pointing that out. The final step is the worst form of foolishness, and that is to be a scoffer. To hate any form of reproof. That's what verse 8 describes. Do not reprove a scoffer or he will hate you. Verse 7, whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse. There's this violent reaction to it. There's a hatred that responds to the correction that views the person bringing it as the enemy. A scoffer in Proverbs is someone who is totally closed to counsel. A person who scorns instruction. And a scoffer is the worst kind of fool because his disdain for instruction cuts him off from help. Other kinds of fools can be bad, but if they're still willing to listen, there's hope for them. But the scoffer shuts his ears and says, no, I hate you. You're against me. You're my enemy. You're bringing this. I don't want to hear it. And you might picture a scoffer as being some punk on the street. But you know what? A scoffer can be a scholar, a professor, a professional, a grown-up that in many ways looks like they've got their life all together. But if you despise and turn from correction and instruction, if you're unwilling to listen to anyone, give any kind of critique or criticism of any part of your life, the Bible describes you as a scoffer and a fool. Does that concern you? If you see that tendency in your life, does it fill you with a godly fear? It should. God is speaking to us. And you know, we need to be precise in our thinking because it's possible for us, I know it's possible for me, to be wise in one area and humble in the way I respond to one person, but then a scoffer in the way I respond to another person or another issue. And we need to be willing to look at the specifics of how we're responding, not just look at the good areas of our life, but look at those areas where we're resisting instruction. Now, you might be someone who's outwardly compliant. You say, yes, sir. You say, yes, ma'am. You thank the other person. You nod your head. You know, if you've been around Covenant Life for a while, you learn how to say the right things, to act really appreciative. Oh, thank you so much for bringing that. Thank you for telling me that my child is acting out and hitting your child. Oh, I appreciate that so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But inside, you're thinking, argh. You know, you read this description of the scoffer abusing other people, injuring other people, and I hope you're not physically attacking anyone. If you are, you need to stop it, okay? That's wrong. But what I want you to see is that it's possible to do those things in your heart. On the outside, you're smiling and saying, oh, thank you so much. Oh, thanks for pointing that out to me. I really appreciate that. But inside, you are beating the snot out of that person. You are abusing them. You are injuring them. You are attacking their character. You're judging them. You're resisting them. You're thinking of all the things they're doing wrong. All the things they've gotten wrong. You know, one of the saddest parts about being a pastor is watching in different times where people who once walked with the Lord wander from the Lord. And you don't have to be a pastor to say that. Many of you have had friends and family members who have strayed from God and disobeyed God. And you know, one of the things that as a pastoral team, as we pray for different people and as we seek to counsel different people and as we deal with different scenarios and situations, there's a consistency to the pattern of how that process of wandering begins and how it progresses. And so consistently, one of the starting point of that heart that is drawn towards sin and drawn towards foolishness is a person losing their taste for correction and instruction from others. They start to resent other people pointing something out in their life. So maybe it's a girl and she starts going out with a non-Christian guy, and her friends start to come to her and they start to challenge her and they start to ask questions, and she resents that. She doesn't, why is everybody pressing in on me? And I've heard people say this on multiple occasions where they'll make the statement, I feel like I need to get away from people who are judgmental. Now look, it's wrong to be judgmental. People shouldn't be judgmental. People should ask questions. They should share their thoughts in a loving and humble way. And yet, isn't it possible for all of us to substitute the word judgmental for loving correction and instruction? And see, when you do that, then you can write off what they're saying instead of listening. Because it's their problem. They're just judgmental. That's why they want to point something out to me. And so that person begins to isolate themselves from other people. And they don't want to show up at church because they know so-and-so is going to see them and they're going to say, hey, what's going on? And you know, what are you doing there? And I've been praying for you. Or they don't want to go to care group. Why don't they want to go to care group? Because they don't want to be around people who will ask them hard questions or disagree with them. And I've heard people say at different times, I'm with this other group of people. And, you know, I've got these non-Christian friends, which it's great to have non-Christian friends if you're sharing the gospel with them. But oftentimes the appeal is, I love these people because, you know, they just accept me for how I am. And often what that really means is they never disagree with me. They never tell me I'm wrong. They never challenge me. You know what? That's a comfortable place to be, but that's not true friendship. True friendship, true love for another person is being willing to speak the truth to them, even when it means saying that they're wrong. That's a dangerous path to be walking down. Maybe you're walking down that path and it's not that you're going off the deep end in sin. It's not that you're leaving the church. It's not that you're rejecting all Christians. But you're just kind of staying away from that particular friend because they've shared something with you. And so you're finding other friends in the church that don't know about that pattern in your life and aren't going to challenge you. And do you see how we can be drawn towards folly because of our pride? There's always a good reason to reject correction and instruction. Do you realize that? We can always come up with a good excuse. All of us. Maybe it's the imperfections of the people that are pointing out your mistakes. They come and they share something with you, and you're like, wait a second. What about you? My wife and I have done this with each other a few times, haven't we, honey? You've done it more than I have, but I try to include myself in that. No, there have been so many times where Shannon will come to me and lovingly share a thought with me. She'll correct me in a loving way or point out something that I need to grow in or that I'm not serving the family in well. And my response is, oh, thank you so much for sharing that. You know, it's so funny. There are 10 things that I've been thinking about that you need to grow in. Come on! That's a humble response, isn't it? And we've had to talk about that and repent of that and realize that that moment is so precious when we have the opportunity to receive instruction that we don't want to muddy the waters and divert the issue by trying to point something out in the other person. Friends, if we wait for perfect people to show up to point out our errors and our flaws, we will die fools. Because they're never going to show up. Maybe the issue for you is discounting people's observations because they're not 100% accurate. Like every little detail is not exactly right. Like they came to me and they shared that I was unkind last Monday. Well, it wasn't Monday, it was Tuesday. Oh my goodness, it was Tuesday. Every little detail has to be exactly right before you're willing to listen to it. Or maybe your focus is the process, how the process was not handled right in the way that they reproved you. You know, you didn't like their tone. You didn't like the way they came to you. And maybe they did something wrong. Maybe they didn't do it in the most gentle way. At some point, we have to deal with the fact that being told you're wrong is not fun. There's no way to make that fun. You know, it's not like baking a cake and throwing a party, or there's just nothing you can do that gets around the fact that at some point you're being told that you're maybe not absolutely perfect and the ultimate man of the universe. That's not fun for our pride. And if we focus on, well, you could have done that more gently, you could have waited, it wasn't a good time of day, I never like to be corrected at 6 p.m. It's just not a good time for me. You know, whatever it might be, we can come up with all these different excuses. And yet, do you see, with all these things, even if there's some truth to it, even if maybe the person didn't do it exactly right or whatever it might be, it's not 100% accurate. If we make all these excuses, we're just building up a wall around ourselves to keep out the blessing and the life that comes with correction and instruction and reproof. Here's a statement that I encourage you to write down. It convicts me as I reflect on it. The heart of a fool can always find an excuse for ignoring correction. The heart of a fool can always find an excuse for ignoring correction. I'm not saying today that everything that people correct you in is absolutely accurate. They might be wrong in what they're saying. They might be pointing out something to you that's just not accurate. They might be judging you. Their attitude might be wrong. 9 things out of the 10 things that they're bringing might be flawed. But if there's one grain of truth, if you're a wise person, you'll grab hold of that and you'll desire to learn and grow. You know, the question is, how can we do this? It's hard. How do you receive correction and instruction from an imperfect person whose motives might not be right, who might not have all the information, who might be getting it wrong? How do you do that? How do you respond humbly? Well, the key to doing that is given to us in Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. Look at this again with me. This is the most important verse in this chapter. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Where's the starting point of being able to listen to advice and accept instruction and reproof? It starts with the fear of the Lord. This is the beginning of wisdom. And the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. What we need to see is that ultimately, it's not about all these other people. It's not about them being perfect or seeing things perfectly. Ultimately, what this is about is our knowledge of God and how we are viewing God. We've already learned together as we studied Proverbs that the fear of the Lord is the main theme of Proverbs. The fear of the Lord means to have an awesome respect for God. It's the right recognition of God as God. Fearing the Lord means believing that God is ultimate, that His will, His words, His purposes are what's most important. And so when you picture the fear of the Lord, here's what I want to encourage you to picture in your mind. Picture yourself kneeling down before God. Because that's what the fear of the Lord is. It's this submission. And kneeling before Him and just making the statement, God, You are God and I am not. You are the ultimate one and I am not the ultimate one. You are the perfect one and I am not the perfect one. You are right and just and sinless, and I am imperfect and sinful and full of error. That's what it means to come before the Lord and acknowledge Him rightly, to have an awesome respect for Him in His holiness. And what I want you to see is the connection between this posture of heart before God and rightly processing other people's correction. Do you see that this is how we are to come to the cross of Jesus Christ? Right? We come and we bow down before the cross. And what you may have never thought about is the fact that it's at the cross that we learn to taste the sweetness of correction and reproof. Do you realize how the cross of Christ reproves you? Do you realize how the cross of Christ says that you are wrong? The cross of Jesus Christ says that you are a sinner. It says that you are deserving of God's judgment and wrath. It says that you are wrong in the deepest part of your being. It says that you cannot make yourself right with God. It says that nothing you can do will ever be enough to be righteous before God. That is reproof. That is criticism. That is correction. And yet in that correction is the most wonderful news that the world has ever known. Because the cross not only says that we're wrong and we're sinful and we're lost and we're dead in our sin, it also says God has sent His Son to redeem us. And He's hung on the cross to take the punishment for all of our wrongness and sinfulness. And Jesus has suffered in our place so that we can be forgiven and loved. That's what the cross speaks. But you never hear that good news until you acknowledge the bad news about yourself. Until you agree with God's assessment of your state as a sinner, deserving God's judgment. But oh, when you receive that, you receive life. You receive fellowship with God. And correction and reproof are now sweet to you. Sweet to you. And here's what I want you to see. Here's the connection. When you're kneeling before the Lord and you're acknowledging, Lord, I'm a sinner. I'm only forgiven because of what Jesus did for me. Lord, I've disobeyed You and I've dishonored You. Lord, I'm not worthy of all Your grace, but I receive Your love. Thank You that Jesus died for me. When you're doing that and somebody comes along and taps you on the back and points out something that you could improve in and says, hey, you made a mistake over here. It's not so hard to say, you know, I probably did. Look what Jesus had to do to save me. You know, I probably did. Let me hear what You have to say. They come along and say, you know, You could have led better here, and this wasn't the most effective thing. And if you're kneeling before the ultimate one, the God of heaven, your response should be, you know what? I want to do whatever I can to better serve Him. So let me hear what You have to say. Or Josh, you're not parenting in the most effective way. You could improve in the way that you're leading our kids. Well, you know what? I'm a sinner and Jesus died to forgive me. So I probably am making a mistake and I want my kids to know the Lord. So help me. Speak to me. Give me advice and correction and reproof because I want to serve Jesus. Do you see that correction and reproof isn't devastating for the person who's already been devastated by the cross of Jesus Christ? It doesn't have to shatter your life because you've already been shattered on the truth that God sent His Son to die for you. And that's what enables you to humble yourself before other people. That's why Proverbs can say, the fear of the Lord, the right recognition of this God who has revealed Himself in Jesus Christ, is the beginning of wisdom. Everything else is built on this. All the acceptance of correction, reproof, and instruction is built on you receiving the correction and reproof and instruction of the gospel of God. If you're not willing to listen to God's reproof of you, you're not going to listen to anybody else's. But when you bend your knee to Him, when you acknowledge Him as first, as the ultimate one, as God, you can receive that reproof and instruction from others. You see, behind this choice that we're offered between Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly is the most important choice that any human being faces, and that is whether or not we'll choose God. That's who Lady Wisdom represents. Her house on the hill with its seven pillars calling from the heights. For the original readers, they would have understood that that was alluding to a temple, a place of worship. Solomon is communicating the choice of Lady Wisdom ultimately is a choice to know and worship the living God. And the living God has revealed Himself in His Son, Jesus Christ. You see, friends, there's good news. Wisdom really is a person. But it's not a lady on a hill in a house. It's Jesus Christ. The Bible says He is our wisdom. It says that in Him are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And He calls to us not from a house on a hill. He calls to us from a different hill, doesn't He? The hill of Calvary. He calls us to that place where He laid down His life for our sins. And choosing wisdom is choosing Him. It's choosing to believe that He is who He says He is. It's choosing to agree with His assessment of our lives. And when we agree with that, we can receive imperfect correction and reproof from anybody else, because it's not about us or them. It's about Jesus. Jesus is our wisdom. We honor Him. We choose Him when we sit down and we eat and drink with Lady Wisdom.